All right, all, thanks for joining us for another Nurse Stories podcast. Today, I have a special guest, which I'll introduce in a minute. But first, a shout out to our sponsors, which is Five Square Aesthetics. Five Square Aesthetics helps all of you nurses who are watching get into aesthetics by offering you all the things you need to get in, from legal support to starting your own side hustle, to education, to product ordering. Heck, they even find you a medical director. So if you're interested in getting into aesthetics, reach out to Five Square Aesthetics. You can check them out at fivesquareaesthetics.com. Give them a call and they'd be happy to help you. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce my guest today. This is Abby. Say hi, Abby.
Hi.
Abby, tell us a little bit about yourself. I take it you're a nurse because you're on Nurse Stories.
I am a nurse. I actually just graduated nursing school December of 22, so been about a year and a half. Which is really weird because I'm technically not a new grad anymore, and no, that doesn't feel right.
It doesn't. Do you remember the time, like, I'll speak to a specific, but do you remember the time where you realized, I'm not a new grad anymore? Or, oh my gosh, I'm actually competent? Or, do you know what I mean? That, like, wowza?
Me and my coworker were talking, and just randomly one day, I was like, yeah, like, when I first started, like, last March or something, and I'm like, oh, it's May. Like, it's been past a year. This is weird. And we both had started at the same time. And we just looked at each other like, that's not actually. And we both charge now occasionally. I'm like, since when did this happen? I just remember getting my email that you've been accepted. And it's like,
yeah. That fast, right?
Insanely fast.
I remember being a new grad and I worked on a med-surg unit. Mm-hmm. And this nurse who I looked up to, her name was Amber. And she had been in it for about a year and a half. So about where you are now. Mm-hmm. And I remember her thinking, so we had something called the crisis team. So crisis team is when you have something really bad happening, you call the crisis team, you know this. And they would come and they would take care of everything. They call the doctor, they figure it all out. It was just this wonderful service, especially for a new person that didn't know what the hell they were doing.
Definitely.
And so I remember I had an issue and I was like, oh, thank heavens for the crisis team. You know, I called them and they took care of it all. And she was like, yeah, they're nice. And then a couple of days went by and she had her own crisis. And she's like, oh, I got this crisis I'm dealing with. I'm like, well, call the crisis team. She's like, oh, I don't know. I'll just take care of it myself. And I'm like, you're a freaking nut. Like, you have this resource. You can call them. You can go do something else and they'll take care of everything for you. And she's like, ah, it's just kind of a pain. I'll just deal with this myself. Fast forward. And this is when I'm brand new. Fast forward about a year. And the same kind of situation happened. And I remember thinking, I think I'll just take care of this myself. I'm not going to activate the crisis team. And I was like, no, son of a bitch, I'm there. That was my light bulb moment, right?
Yeah, I don't think I just had like the click. It was just like kind of just looking back and then just like, oh, this is happening.
Right. Okay, so you're a fresh grad. Were you doing anything before nursing school? Was that like always the plan?
Kind of always the plan. I grew up knowing I wanted to do something medical. For a long time, I decided I wanted to be an ophthalmologist. And then I realized that eyeballs are really squishy and freak me out. So diverted from that path. I got my CNA in high school. Mm. My high school actually did that program. So I think I got it when I was 17, like my certification. Didn't end up working in it because I was going to be moving different states and then plans fell through, blah, blah, blah. Ended up just doing retail in college, but that was always the plan. Once I got my CNA, I said, yeah.
So you never worked as a CNA?
Mm-mm.
Yeah. That's probably wise. That's a hard job.
It is. Yeah. And I love the hell out of all my CNAs and I appreciate them.
Yeah.
We have days where we don't have CNAs. And
isn't that the worst?
Oh, it's bad.
It's the worst. This is a funny story. And I might have mentioned on the podcast, but you may or may not have heard it. When I left the hospital, this was in 2019, I left the hospital and I didn't go back. And then one day, my son needed to have a procedure done at the hospital. We went back and I pulled into my old parking space. I hadn't been there in like years. And as soon as I pulled in the parking garage, I had this thought, man, I hope I have enough staff today. And I'm like, what? Why am I thinking? Like, I'm like, oh my gosh. And then all that stress came back because I was an administrator and my job was to staff the unit. And we never had enough staff, right? Because what ends up happening? Somebody goes crazy, something happens, and you pull your CNA to go sit with this patient.
Yep.
Does that sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have no support.
Yep.
It's just you. Yep. And so that stress was so ever present, right? You need your CNAs.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like the first to go when management decides that we need fewer hours, right?
Which is ridiculous. Yeah, if we our staffing ratio is a little weird. I'm on a very small like 10 bed unit. We just do like overnight recoveries. So if we don't have a certain amount of patients. So like example for day shift, if we only have, we can have up to six patients. If we don't have a seventh, then our CNA gets cut and it's just the two nurses. But we're still just as busy with really rapid admits, discharges and stuff. And it's like, oh yeah, like I just got them settled. Like they'll get started on post-op vitals. And I'm like, oh no, they won't. I have to do that also, as well as discharge these three other patients that I have right now. So
ridiculous.
Yeah. Just like even all the assigned.
So you're almost hoping for another patient to just get.
And I was like, please give me just one more so we can have them.
Right. So you got straight out of college, got your job.
Yes. Always knew I was going to move to Boise. I'm originally from Idaho Falls. Graduated, moved here, had applied to a few places, and kind of, I was actually determined that I was going to do ICU. It's like, that's what I wanted to do. I did my preceptorship in college in a burn ICU back in Eastern Idaho. I was like, oh, I'm not going to like this at all. I just wanted normal. Fell in love with it. It was amazing. And that really sparked my, like, I want to do critical care. And there was a few places that I applied, but like residencies weren't open and stuff. And then I had an interview for the unit that I'm on now. I'm like, oh, that sounds a little interesting, like a little more procedural kind of things. Ended up getting hired there, worked on a general surgery unit for about 6 months to like get my skills, because it is such a small unit that oftentimes when I first transferred down there, like I'd be alone. It's just me and a CNA at night. So I have to be competent and know how to do my things.
So no charge nurse or anything, just you and a CNA.
So got my basic skills on that gen surge unit and then transferred down, and I've loved it ever since.
Good. No plans on moving on or anything like that?
I feel like eventually I do. I definitely want to stay procedural. So whether that's like endoscopy, IR, cath lab, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's kind of like the traditional evolution of nursing. They get into like med surge or something that's kind of very general, and then they really love the procedural stuff, so they'll get into like pre-op or endo, or ER is procedural to a lot of extent.
Yeah,
and there's more, I mean, it's probably a blend of generalized and specialized, whereas ICU is all, you know, heavy stuff, right?
Yeah.
But then you graduate and then you finally get to the point where you're like, what's next? That's what happened to me. Like I did the management route and then I'm like, I'm going to go get my NP.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go do that. And so, so what's like, does that ever interest you? Like,
it definitely does. Like I was all through, college. Like I wanted to go to CRNA school originally. And then I graduated school and I'm like, there's no chance in hell I'm going back anytime soon.
It's rough.
Yeah, so
it's like med school. I mean, you can't have a job. It's
no,
now they're that three is and your a half full-time year job. Programs, right?
I know a girl that actually just got into CRNA school. I was talking to her. It's like, how's that going? She's like, oh, I want to die, but like, it'll be worth it in the end. It's like,
maybe.
Yeah, we'll see.
Maybe. It will be. Anytime you suffer, whatever's on the other side of suffering is usually a good thing.
Yeah.
Unless it traumatizes you.
And yeah.
And then not. But yeah, CRNA is interesting. It's interesting because they still have master programs and doctoral programs. The master programs are 2.5 years. The doctoral programs are 3.5 years. But it's like nonstop. It's like year-round, 10-hour days, constant, constant, constant.
Yeah, it is your full-time job and social
life. You'll make a great living when you get out.
Oh, yeah.
I have a friend who's a CRNA, and he – what did he tell me? I think he started off at like 180, 180 grand, something like that. Very shortly, 220, 225. Then eventually got offered ownership in his surgical center. That's where he works. He works in a small surgical center. Works from early morning to like 2, Monday through Thursday. Has a life. Rolling in it. Loving life. Easy.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
That's the dream, honestly.
That's the dream, right? Versus go wipe this butt. Go clean up that mess.
Yeah.
Does that sound familiar?
Oh, yeah. I know that well.
All right. Well, that's cool. Well, let's get into some stories. So tell me, I'm sure you got a story or two, but tell me some fun stories. A crazy story, a fun story, you know, an interesting story, a touching story. I don't know. Go for it.
Got a few. First one that comes to mind is a kind of funny one. So one of the neurosurgeons that we work with, it is our running joke that his patients go crazy, all of them. Nothing against him, nothing about the patients specifically, but 9 out of 10 times, if we're going to have a crazy patient, it's going to be one of his. And it was when I was back on night shift, and it was me and I think just the CNA that night. It was just the two of us. And I had gotten like some weird kind of vibes and reports like, yeah, he's a drinker, but like he says he's been sober since, what was this? It was like September when this happened. It's like hasn't drank since 4th of July. So I was like, okay, we'll see if that's true. And then like I met him. It's like it was totally fine at 7 p.m. Then 9 p.m. rolls around and getting a little spooky, getting a little weird. He had had a drain from the surgical site and a Foley catheter. Had those two. And just as it's going, just the things he's telling me is like just not adding up. I'm like, I think he's withdrawing. It's like I had done many withdrawals up on our gen surge unit. So like I know the signs. Like I think he's withdrawing. I was my messaging provider, like, no, I don't think he is. Okay, but I'm seeing him right now. I think he is. He was kind of doing his thing. He got wore his brace when he was out of bed. I'm like, okay, good enough. That's what the doctors wanted him to do. If you want to go and rearrange the entire room tonight, be my guest. I can focus on my four other patients. And then I hear this like scraping going around in there. I walk in. He had torn out his IV catheter, still infusing, just hung over into the trash can, didn't pause it or anything. I'm like, okay, he moved the trash can over. Thank you for at least cleaning up the mess. And then had pulled out his drain, wrapped it up perfectly, and like just placed it on top of the trash can. Like also just right on top of there.
Being considerate.
Mm-hmm. And had pulled out his catheter balloon intact. Also wrapped it up nicely, set it down. And then he's just sitting like cross-legged on the bed. When I walk in there, I'm like.
Was he naked?
No, gown still on. Mm. I was like, what's going on? He's like, oh, yeah, I had all these things attached to me. I went ahead and took them off for you. I put them away. I'm like.
Ouchie.
Okay. Like. Oh.
Ouchie. Mm-hmm. So for those who are not nurses or in the medical profession, why we say an ouchie is that a catheter has 10 cc's of fluid in it.
Yep.
Right. So when you put a catheter in to anchor it, once the catheter goes into the bladder, you inflate a ball of fluid, saline. That makes a bubble, and 10 cc's is 1/3 of an ounce. And so you've got a bubble in there that is. I think when
they're blown up, they're about that big.
Yep. About that big.
Coming out a hole about.
Yep.
That big.
And you get the point. And so that has to, fluid doesn't contract, which means tissue has to expand. And I bet that was a bloody mess.
Oh, yeah. But he was just the most casual thing about it. Like he didn't like yelp in pain. There wasn't like cussing or anything. Just. Perfectly. I just heard a weird scraping from the trash can being dragged across the floor, and then the IV pump beeped. And so I walked in to like check in what's going on. Just everything wrapped up perfectly, just sitting with a towel in between. It's like just cross-legged on the bed. It's like, yeah, these things were attached to me. I took them off for you. I'm like,
so did it get worse?
Yeah.
Here we go.
After that, just
buckle up. We're going for a ride.
Just the usual crazy withdrawing symptoms, just being very confused, didn't get combative, which I'm thankful for, this specific patient, but just very confused, was like chasing like children around the hallways. There are no children in the hallways. It is 3 a.m.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm messaging the doctor. I'm like, can we get like some phenobarb or like Ativan or something, please? This man is withdrawing. Doctor comes by at 7 a.m. We just ride it out the rest of the night.
Ouch.
Doctor comes in at 7 a.m. and I'm like, hey, I think he's withdrawing. Like he has been very confused, is doing all these things. He's like, no, he's fine. He's fine. I was like, no. And I had given a report to our charge nurse for the next day. She had had him as her one patient. And she, like, we go in and assess him. She's like, oh, no, he's with 100% withdrawing from alcohol right now. And he just didn't believe it. So it's like, well, have fun with that. I'm going to go home and sleep. I'll see you in 12 hours. Come back. First thing I ask her, did he withdraw? It's like, oh yeah, he's up on, the ortho unit in delirium tremens right now.
Oh
yeah. It's like bad seizures.
Oh,
really bad withdrawal.
On an Ativan drip probably.
Oh yeah. Ativan drip, phenobarbs, all ouchie. Seizure pads, everything. I see, so, the doctor said, so he's not withdrawing, huh? He's like, yeah, so he withdrew. I'm like, hmm. Interesting. interesting.
What people don't realize is when you go and you're admitted to the hospital, you are not there for doctor care. You're there for nursing care.
Yes.
And the nurses are bound by state regulations to only do a certain amount of stuff. You have to do what the doctor says. And so you're messaging the doctor and, hey, I've been around the block. I know what's going on. Here's what's going down. Please help. And if they say no, then you have to deal with the disaster. And luckily, now let's back up this. You're a young lady in your 20s, I take it. There's one other person on the floor, and you have an adult man who's withdrawing from alcohol, and a lot of times they get violent.
Yeah. And not, no one else on the floor.
Not exactly.
Like, no one's in PACU, no one's in pre-op. It is us two.
Not a good situation. Mm-mm. Like, in a prison, you have better security, right? Oh, yeah. But, that can get a little scary.
Yeah.
I have hundreds of those stories.
Yeah, like, luckily, he was chill, like, pulled some stuff out that he shouldn't have.
Yeah.
They ended up having to put the drain back in him.
Were they able to put the catheter back in?
It was just kind of, his protocol is just leave the catheter in until they get up with physical therapy.
I mean, but did him ripping it out cause damage to where they had to recatheterize him? Or was
not
he able to
that
pee?
I'm aware of.
Wow.
Yeah. Actually, no. He peed on my shift. Lucky. Yeah. Which I was very surprised by.
That's lucky. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's interesting. But yeah, that kind of stuff happens all the time.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And it was just the...
Did you sleep well that night when you were worried about him during the day?
During the day?
Like, at what point did you stop taking nursing home with you? Do you remember?
Probably a few months in, I would say.
You're better than I did. I took it home for months.
Like, on our dread surge, we got all the traumas that weren't ICU appropriate. Mm. So if they weren't ICU, they came to us. And I saw a lot of kind of heavy things, and it really affected me for a few months, where my boyfriend at the time was like, you like need to just leave it at home or leave it at work.
So easier said than done.
It really is. And I like every morning I got off work, I just sat in my car, and I remember like many times the first probably month that I was off orientation by myself specifically, where I would just get in my car every morning after work, call my mom, and just sob for 20 minutes before starting my car and driving home and going to bed.
So that was your process.
Yeah. Definitely just call her. She is like kind of in the healthcare field, not like patient care. She does more administration stuff. So she kind of understands like a little bit about situations from just me telling her also. So just the calling her, immediately sobbing, going home.
So let me ask you a question. Did she try solving your problems, or did she just let you vent?
She lets me vent. That's she learned that the hard way in high school.
Yes.
It's like I complain and she's like, well, how about we fix this? And being a hormonal teenager, figuring out life in general, and we both have very big personalities, we got into many screaming fights about, I don't need it fixed. I just need you to listen.
I've been married for 22 years, and yes, I know now how to listen. Yeah. I'm not a fixer, I'm a listener.
It's like, if I need solutions, I will ask you for them.
100%.
But yeah.
So that was your process for a few months, and then you kind of started to realize how to let it go for yourself.
Yeah, just kind of. So actually on my very, very, very first shift, like brand new, like I did my first week of just like the hospital policies, regulations, all that fun stuff. My very first shift working on a floor, I was a shadowing a CNA. We'd just gotten a report and we go into this patient's room, and luckily the patient had been on comfort care, but like as we walk in, we watch him take his last breaths. It's like 7:10 in the morning, very first shift. And I just sit there, I'm like, oh, okay. She's like,
people die.
So we'll come do postmortem in a little bit, but let's go see our 12 other patients that we have. I'm like, sounds good. So kind of just didn't process it all day because I was so busy. And then I get in my car and just slump down. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, no, like this is real. People die.
Your first shift, you had somebody die.
First
patient of the first shift.
Yes.
And they died.
Yes.
Did you pronounce them dead?
I was shouting the CNA that day.
You had the license.
No. I do have the license, but no, we called the nurse in.
Okay.
And then she did that. Then they contacted the doctor and did postmortem care. And then something about my first days, I don't know what it is, but then my first night off orientation, like as an actual nurse, I had this patient for the past 2 weeks with my preceptor, and he was doing really good. He had like a seizure history, but hadn't had one in the past like 6 years. Like, he was doing good. I'd been with him for the past 2 weeks. So I just go in, say hi, check everything. He had had an NG tube placed. So I was just making sure suction was on the correct level. And he was been totally good. And then I look over and suction's like red line max. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to turn that down a little bit. And as I turn it down, he stops talking for a second. So I just look at him and like eyes roll back, slump over on his side, start seizing.
Ooh.
It's probably like 7:15 p.m. also. First night by myself. Always. Luckily, our charge nurse was right outside. So I like yell for him. He comes in. We're just like holding him, suction, and like called a rapid on him. Right there, first patient, first night by myself. I'm like, is it me? Like, am I the black cloud here?
Probably. he turned out okay?
Yeah, he did. He ended up, he had one more like an hour later. We ended up transferring up to our tele unit for more step down sure. care. Got transferred back to us like 2 weeks later, I think. I think he was in the hospital total like 3 months.
Wow.
Yeah. He was a long haul patient.
I had a patient for a year. 1 year. It was, and I was new. Complete train wreck. Tubes everywhere. Fistulas forming weekly coming out of the belly. And a fistula, for those of you who don't know, is where the guts literally make a hole to the outside mm-hmm. world and stool just comes out of their belly. It's a pretty tragic yeah. thing.
It's like natural ostomy kind of.
Yeah. This patient was also a nurse practitioner. So you have to mind your P's and Q's because
yeah.
she knew
yeah.
all of the
knows what's happening.
Wash your hands, yeah. all that kind of stuff, right? And when you're new and you have that much of a train wreck, it's just so stressful. Mm-hmm. Just so stressful.
Definitely.
Pretty horrible stuff. Do you have any funny stories? I mean, the pulling out the wiener is a pretty funny story.
Just a lot of people pulling out things they shouldn't be. Like a lot of IVs, like so in my unit, we don't take like sundown or dementia patients. We don't have the staff to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And especially like on nights when it's 8 patients, 2 people, like 2 nurses, like I don't have the staff to be watching you and also taking care of my other people. So we try to transfer them off, but I think she was like a joint replacement or something. I don't even remember what. But Ivy had been beeping. Other nurse was stuck in a room. I was stuck in another room getting an admit. So when we finally go in there, same kind of thing. She had gotten out of bed. Her IV line that had been infusing got hooked on the bed rail, pulled it out. She had taken off her gown. So she is just butt naked, standing on the side of the bed, arms straight, squirting blood out of the IV in her arm. Just squirting blood. So I walk in there, I'm like, okay, well, like, let's get some gauze. Let's stop the bleeding first of all. I like hand her a wet washcloth to like start wiping herself down because just blood like carry on Halloween, just
oh, really?
Head to toe because she had been moving her arm around too. So blood is everywhere.
And she's out of it.
Yeah. So confused. No like history of dementia or anything. I think it was just hospital confusion, mm-hmm. delirium. So I like hand her a wet washcloth to help wipe herself down and she's just trying to like cover herself. Our washcloths are about that big.
Sure.
And so it's like covering like half of half one breast. Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, it's not doing much, but it's like, let's wipe you down. Then we'll get you a nice clean gown. We'll get you dried off. We'll just wrap that up so it's not bleeding everywhere. But yeah, no, just people pulling out things they shouldn't be and going confused. Had a patient that sundown was chasing their cats around the unit.
Sounds about right.
All night. I'm like, where are you going? She's like, my cat's walking around. I said, okay, let's like get him back in the room. So we herd the cat back into the room, gave her some towels to fold. And then we ended
That's an old trick. Folding blankets, yeah. folding towels.
It's like, however am I going to get all this laundry done before my husband gets home? Yeah. Then they fold it all nicely, take it, and then you shake it up and give them back to him.
Yep. Old nursing trick right there.
Yeah. Just a lot of... Those are my mostly funny ones. That patient that ripped out all his drains and everything. Me and the CNA go back out to the nurse's station after we got everything settled down. Just look at each other and just start busting up laughing.
And that's how nurses deal with,
oh,
with
yeah.
stress, right?
Oh, yeah.
You go from crying to your mom in mm-hmm. the car to making it a joke about yeah. everything, right?
You have to.
You have to. And you look back at these horrible things and you laugh about them. right? Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, remember that time that that lady was butt naked and blood's everywhere? Oh my gosh, she was a disaster. Ha 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 ha. The time?
Yeah.
Here we go. Mm-hmm.
Right? And two of my best friends are nurses. So it's like, we'll be FaceTiming, like just telling our crazy patient stories. And like our boyfriends and husbands will just be on the side, just like looking like, what is wrong with you guys? It's like, what? They're like, that sounds traumatizing. Like, yeah, at the time it was, but that was like 6 hours ago. We're good now.
We're moved on.
Yeah, we're fine. Right? We processed.
Let me ask you a question. Have you ever had doctors be mean to you? Or they've been pretty civil?
Yeah. On my unit now, not as much. Mm. We have our pretty much just like core rotation of doctors, and they're all pretty great. There are occasional ones where I dread.
Are the older ones, are they usually older that are mean? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's been a shift. And I saw that shift. Like when I came on, this is in 2011. Gosh, I can't believe I'm getting so old. When I came on, the old time doctors were mean. And the new doctors that came out of school were wonderful in comparison. I mean, they had their scolding moments, but mm-hmm. for the most part, thank you for calling. Thanks for taking care of my patients. And the older doctors were like, don't call me. Right. And so one time I got enough courage up, this doctor who will not be named, was just grilling me over blood pressure. When was his last I's and O's? And I'm like, well, let me look through the chart. Come on, you need that information. And this is at 2 a.m. for an hour grilling me about fluids and medications. And I'm just trying to go through the chart. And then when he finally got done, he ordered like metoprolol, 25 milligrams or some stupid thing, right? And I'm just like, give me a break. And I got done. I was so frustrated with him. I'm like, why did you grill me? Like, what was the purpose of all that? You know what he told me? He goes, I was trained to believe that every nurse lies and I have to get to the bottom of the truth. So I assume every time a nurse calls me, they're lying. And it's my job to figure out if they're lying or not. I'm like, that's horrible.
Because we don't have enough stuff to deal with on a shift. I've
got 5 patients in the middle of the night, no staff. Mm-hmm. And I'm on the phone with you because your blood pressure is too high. And you're trained. But anyways, that old school, as they left, in fact, what happened was there was a cultural shift in nursing and they wouldn't tolerate it anymore. Mm-hmm. And they got people fired. They got these old school doctors fired, surgeons fired. And like, we're not putting up with that crap anymore. No. That doctor I just told you about ended up getting fired.
Yeah, I've heard. I personally have like reported a doctor for
inappropriate.
Yeah, just like inappropriate, just unnecessarily rude for things. I remember one night he had in his order set to page him if the systolic blood pressure was over 140.
Yo, you got to be kidding me.
I wish I was. So yeah, vitals every 4 hours, every single time it was like 146, 144. And finally, like I paged him the third time, it's like systolic blood pressure, blah, 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 blah. Just like letting you know as I'm ordered to do. Finally, he messaged me back and says, why are you telling me this? I'm not going to do anything for it. I said, it's in your order set for me to notify you for systolic over 140. Do you want to fix that so you don't keep getting notified? He's like, yeah, I'll fix it now. Okay, thanks.
So you now have a situation where you're messaging people electronically.
Mm-hmm, through Epic.
So you're not calling them.
Some doctors do.
Yeah, but for the most part, you just send them a message and they get
notified. Yeah.
That's sweet.
Nice.
That's really nice. Mm-hmm. Then you don't have that, I'm pissed off you're calling me at 2 a.m. conversation. Oh, yeah. They just message you back.
Yeah.
And they can't put anything mean in the message because it's forever.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I had one like GI doc. Love him. He is amazing. But I was when I was first new, so it's like I didn't know most of the other like night shift docs. They're like page them or do that. But he wanted you to Epic chat him, which I didn't know. So I called his cell phone. He's like, yeah, next time just chat me. Like, I don't want to deal with phone calls right now. He's like, okay, sounds good. So perfect. Message him, replies in 5 minutes. I'm like, perfect.
Nice thing about messages, too, is you can't mess it up.
Mm-hmm.
Phone calls, you can always mess up.
Oh, yeah. I could, like, write it out, make sure that's what I want to say, and then send.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's nice. I did not have that luxury. In fact, my luxury was interpreting handwritten charts.
Oh.
That's what I did. And my handwriting was horrible. So now that the one thing is you probably don't know medical shorthand, do you?
know a little bit of it. Not as much as I'd like to.
You got a taste of it in school, probably. Mm-hmm. It's a language in and of all of itself. So funny. Like in my clinic today, I'll write like notes. Like somebody would be on the phone. I'll just write a medical shorthand note and I'll give it to them. And they'll be like, I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah, like I need you like full sentences, please.
See with the line above it. Like, what's that? I go, that means with.
Yeah, I know that one. I do use that one.
You do use that one too. But yeah, that's going to be gone. Mm-hmm. Like medical shorthand is a dying language.
I would say still a lot of our doctors, like on their progress notes at least.
Well, they know. They write out handwritten progress notes?
Mm-mm. It's typed up, but a lot of them are like still.
They'll still be like PRN. They'll still be those kind of words. But the three lines with three dots above it to indicate three and the C's with the line and the S with the line and the X with the line and all those shorthands, those are gone.
Yeah.
There's no key on the keyboard.
Yeah. And I'll see them write in their little notebook. They'll be like, be peeking over the shoulder.
They're still trained on it, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure they're still trained.
Sure, they have to be.
Because
there's still enough providers that do use the shorthand.
Well, and there's enough rural areas that don't have access to electronic medical records as well. So it'll still be with it, but definitely a lost art. We have a segment that we call Up the Rear segment. Do you have any fun stories about a foreign object where it shouldn't be?
I don't think I personally have had any. We like to play the game of middle of the night, just seeing what's in the ER and foreign body, guessing what it is. I did see an x-ray of someone with a wrench.
A wrench.
A wrench.
How does a wrench get up there? The answer is they put it there.
No, they fell.
Of course they fell.
Yep, they tripped and fell. You know, slipped and fell in the shower. Shampoo bottle went up. Sorry.
Right. You're probably too young for this, but there's a whole episode on Seinfeld about it. Have you seen it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Million to one shot, Doc. Million to one. A wrench. Well, that's an interesting one.
Yes. Well, it's the best one you've seen.
The best one I've seen. Oh. I'm trying to remember. I've told a lot of stories. I don't want to be repetitive for people that have listened, but the best story I have was let's call him a important person, okay? Well-known person.
Mm-hmm.
Ends up in our unit with something stuck up his rear. And let's call that something a 18-inch long dildo with testicles on one side and a normal end on the other. And let's just say that dildo was put up the wrong way, backwards. And got stuck and did some damage. And
I'd assume.
Long story short, needed surgery and bought him a colostomy bag and all this kind of stuff. Well, this well-known person ends up in our unit and he has a wife. And the wife comes in and he tells his wife that he had a cholecystectomy, a gallbladder removal, for those of you who don't know what that means. Well, a gallbladder removal is a one-night stay, quick, simple procedure, involves a few little incisions, boom, you're done, out. It does not involve a ostomy bag. And the wife was like, whoa, wait a minute here. I got Google. Why do you have an ostomy bag? Oh, they had complications. Well, you don't even have any incisions where there should be, and keeps pressing him. We are not allowed to talk to the wife. We cannot tell the wife anything without his permission. Mm-hmm. He has given us strict, you will not share any information with anybody. Doctors can't talk to her, blah, 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 can't talk. She gets, you don't talk to a woman, they're going to figure it out.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways, finally, it's like 8 o'clock at night, 9 o'clock at night. All of a sudden, we start hearing screaming. What? You did this again? You're sick. You're sick. Why do you keep doing this? I don't get it. I'm done. And this is screaming. I mean, it's quiet unit, screaming at the top of your lungs. Runs out of the room. He's trying to follow her, but he's got like drains and IV poles. And she's crying and making a scene. And it's, come back, honey, come back. And she left. I never saw her again. He got his colostomy. He left. And I don't know what happened, but I don't think it was a good thing. So that wasn't the first time.
Again?
That's what she said. Again? You did this again? And just make this. And I'm like, what is going on? I'm about ready to call like a code gray, which is, there's a disruptive person. No, she was just a little bit mad. Just a little bit mad. I don't think I've shared that story yet.
That's a pretty good one.
It's a good one. She wasn't my patient. He wasn't my patient, thank heavens. But it was an interesting situation.
I feel like the nurses on the unit, like especially night shift, always knows the weird things about the other
patients. Well, you have time to look into their histories.
Oh, yeah.
Right, day shift's like, go, 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 go. Night shift, you're like, oh, I'm bored. Let me look at this guy's
Let me just do a little chart review really quick.
Yeah, and you read, you know, and you read the surgical reports. You're like, oh, my gosh, 18 inches long? Balls end first, right? Not a good idea.
No. It's tapered for a reason.
Yeah. We actually, this is so funny. We actually had education provided to us about safe anal toys to educate our patients on that were like this. So we had, when patients came in and had these surgeries to remove stuff, we had a little talk with them about, hey, there are safe things you can put up there. Mm-hmm. I never went there. I'm like, that's, I'm just to get you better and get you out. I'm not going there. Let me go get the unit educator.
Yeah, let's go grab them. They'll come talk to you really quick.
But yeah, that's my, that's one of my better up the rear stories. Yeah,
that's a pretty good one.
That's a pretty good one, but there's some crazy ones out there. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever had a patient like touch you deeply that you still like positively, like an interaction where you're like, oh my gosh, this has like changed me for the better?
Yeah, actually. I originally had her when I was still on orientation. So it's like 3-4 weeks in. She was like a new ostomy placement for this, and I ended up having her. She was there for a few weeks, and I had her multiple nights, and she was just the sweetest, sweetest lady. Had like 5 kids. Her husband had just recently passed away. She's going through like ulcerative colitis flare-up. She ended up having to have an ostomy placed.
Ouch.
And just was the most positive person after all of this horrible things have happening. It was like within like a month of each other. Husband passed away in an accident, flare up, now is in for major surgery. Her kids are at home with her mom while she's in here. Like they can't really come see her because it's during school. So it's just really bad. But it was just so positive the whole time. And it was very, very sweet and touching. So I like asked her, I was like, why are you so positive? She's like, there's a lot of things in my life that I can't control, but my attitude is one of them.
Good. Wow. I got goosebumps.
Good job. Wow. I need to think about that. I forget it often.
There's a lot of things in my life I can't control, but my attitude's one of them. Maybe I'll ask my wife that one. Say, hey, honey, have you heard this? Or my 16-year-old teenage daughter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that'll be a good one.
But she ended up going home, did well. And then I was looking at an admit that was on her board. And I'm like, she looks so familiar. Like, this name sounds so familiar. And then I get her, and as soon as I see her face, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is 8 months later, like long time.
Were they reversing the colostomy?
Mm-hmm. And yay! They reversed it. And I had her as the patient. And she's like, oh my gosh, I had you as a nurse for multiple weeks. I'm like, yeah, I did. She's like, you were amazing. She's like, and you're all by yourself now. Like, you're all grown up. Like, I'm so proud of you. I'm like, thank you.
Full circle.
Yeah, just that full circle moment. It's like, this is why I like nursing. Because it's like,
that is.
As much as I do like my short stay, treat them and eat them patients, I like, that was very touching. The round back.
Oh, that's great.
And see it like completed and like do well since then.
When people are at their worst, that's who the true nature of the person is. Mm-hmm. You see it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
If they're mean, they can hold it in until they're at the rock bottom.
Yeah.
And then they let their mean out. If they're sweet, who they are is emphasized when they're at their worst. Mm-hmm. That's probably a better way of putting it. She's a positive person. Probably everybody around her loves her. And when she was at her worst, that didn't change.
Yeah.
Probably got better. She's like, oh my gosh, like, I could be so much worse. I'd be dead.
Yeah.
You know, my children could not have a mother. Right?
Yeah.
So that's some good life lessons.
It really is. And it's like, you have to remember, it's like in the hospital, it's like you're seeing people on their worst days. It's like you really are.
Of course.
It's like, and as hard as it is, like when you have a patient who's like family member is a lot, or like they're a very needy patient. They just like need everything right now. Like, I don't care. It's like, okay, this is like one of your worst days. And you take that in consideration, still going with compassion. And then when they do be like, I'm so sorry for that. I was like, thank you.
Yeah, that's good. Mm-hmm. Do you have any crazy, health system, interesting facts, like something that you didn't know before you became a nurse, and after a nurse, you're like horrified that this is part of our healthcare system? Like, is there some mm-hmm. part of our healthcare system that you're like, I can't believe we do this, or something you're like, oh, this is really great, I didn't know we did this? Is there some aspect of your health, of the healthcare system, that you say, this is just horrible that we do it this way?
That's a really good question.
Yeah, kind of putting you on the spot there.
No, you're good. Like, a lot of this, it's not necessarily like health system, it's more like just like insurance ways. But it's like a lot of insurance is just not covering like necessary medications. And I'm like, that, like, I knew it was bad, but it's like, actually, like, what do you mean this? I don't remember who it was. Oh, I had a patient that had like 5-level lumbar fusion removal of hardware, like,
ouchie,
big surgery. Wouldn't, Medicaid wouldn't even like approve tramadol.
Tramadol?
Tramadol.
So for those of you listening, tramadol is the weakest opiate on the market. In fact, when I was a nurse, it wasn't even considered an opiate, and it was in the drawer that you didn't even lock.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got to be one of the cheapest meds out there. Why?
Because years previously, she had had issues
with narcotics,
oh, and like had done like methadone treatment and stuff. It was like 5 years previously. And now she's coming in for a major surgery, and they're like, no, it's not valid. It's like, you have to do this prior auth for it.
Oh my gosh, prior auth. So you haven't even started on prior auth.
Yeah, my best friend does like outpatient psychiatry. And so she does, she's kind of like the medical assistant there. So like does all the insurance and like all the prior auths, all the testing, all that fun stuff. And we get talking on insurance and prior auths and stuff. It's like, these patients need this medication, especially her being like psychiatry. It's like, I have like a paranoid schizophrenic patient needs this treatment to have any like normal quality of life.
Yeah.
And insurance is just fighting them every chance they get.
Well, here's what's interesting. Back in the 60s and the 50s, we had roughly 400,000 to 500,000 people in institutions in the United States. Mm-hmm. This is back when we had 150 million people. Okay. And we had institutions to keep these problems of society out of society. Okay. And mental health is a society problem. I don't care if you're conservative. I don't care if you're liberal. Unless you are a horrible person and want to execute these people, it is a problem with society, because these people cannot function in society. Mm-hmm. And if you can't function in society, society needs to have a solution for you. Otherwise, you're caveman.
Oh, yeah.
That's my platform. Then what happened is One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest came out in the 70s. I don't know if you're familiar with that movie. Jack Nicholson, great, won Best Picture. Or I don't know if he won Best Picture. He won Best Actor on it. And it's a story of this man who fakes an illness to get out of prison and go into a psych ward, because psych wards are better. And there's this horrible nurse, gives a nurse Ratchet, and gives a horrible view of what nursing can do. Mm-hmm. And she does everything she can to torture these poor people. And in the end, he gets lobotomized unnecessarily. And then he just, you know.
Yeah.
And it's this wonderfully horrible story. But that started a movement to shut down the institutions. And I think today, last I heard, and you can fact check this, audience, was approximately, there's only enough institution space for roughly 75,000 people now in this country. So, which, for better or worse, may or may not be a good thing. Now we have a situation where all these people that should be institutionalized, let's call it 500,000 people, it's probably much more, are out there in the society. And if we don't properly treat them, what are they going to do? They're going to drive their car into buildings. They're going to beat up people. They're going to cause wounds to them and others. They're going to flood emergency rooms. They're going to do all manner of costly things versus a little pill that might solve the problem, right? And to your friend's point, you have to go through this pre-authorization process, which costs the clinics hundreds of dollars.
Oh, yeah.
They have to pay somebody, let's call it $25-$30 an hour, to be on the phone and waiting for an insurance agent to pick up to get this thing. It could take hours to get a pill approved. Meanwhile, they're without their medication and they're going to go nuts.
Yeah.
They're functioning in society on their medication. If they go a week without it, you're done. And now you're in the emergency room or in prison or worse, and society's going to pay tens of thousands of dollars for these people versus a $20 pill.
And then if they're in the ER, they're holding a bed, which could be used for another patient who has a more critical thing. And now we have patients waiting in the waiting room.
Exactly.
It's just a cycle.
So in my humble opinion, it is a society problem. We need to have programs in place for these people that cannot exist in society. And if you're not willing to do that, you have the only other solution is to institutionalize them or put them in prison, mm-hmm. which is incredibly costly. Much cheaper just to let them see the doctor once a month, let them get some pills, let them get treated, and we're all better off. Yeah. And then they could go get a job and contribute to society. Yeah.
So much cheaper, but they're like, no.
Oh, yeah. You touched a nerve with me. I deal with insurance every day in my clinics, and it's just frustrating.
Yeah.
Their job, I swear to you, their job is to not pay. That's their job. They'll pay the little stuff. They won't ask questions. If there's any kind of money, their job is, we will not pay until you make us.
And then, how can we spend the
little stuff? Let's drag our feet as long as possible until we finally acquiesce. You want to hear a horrible story?
Sure.
Probably going to get in trouble for this one, but I don't care. A colleague of mine had lunch with a vice president of an insurance company that will not be named.
Okay.
And during this lunch, he was advocating for this specific service, which I won't say, to be included in their policy. Mm-hmm. It was not. And if this treatment would be included in this policy, they could fix lifetimes of problems. Okay. Lots of comorbidities that exist from this. And, you know, he made this excellent case to this vice president at lunch. And you know what the vice president of the insurance company said? Why do I care about their longevity? And he got shocked and goes, why? My average person stays for 3 months or 3 years. Our average policyholder will stay on board for 3 years. What do I care if they live to be 100? Because they're going to leave. And then he made the argument, well, they might come back. Well, if they come back with the disease, we'll charge them more. So we want them to leave. And that way, when they come back, they're at a higher risk. We can get more money out of them. That's how insurance companies think. That's a true story.
Oh, my gosh.
Why do I care what their lungs? So they'll have these little like, oh, we'll take $10 off your month if you do this exercise program. That's just public facing.
Yeah.
So they can show that they're interested in your health. They don't care.
We care about our policyholders and patients.
Exactly. They don't care. Mm-mm. All they care about is getting their is making a profit. Mm-hmm. They have shareholders to speak to, and they have studies. I mean, they could tell. They know statistically, if you have these comorbidities and this is your health, we can calculate your life expectancy, and we know you're going to die at this age within months. Like that's how good insurance is at predicting life. And so they know if you have these comorbidities, we're going to spend this much money on you, and we're going to charge you this much money. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just
like nauseating.
It's absolutely nauseating. And the longer you're in the system, the worse it's going to get.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not, it's getting worse every year. Okay. Obamacare was a disaster. Insurance is a disaster. I tell people insurance and healthcare should act like insurance and automobiles. Okay. What does insurance and automobiles cover? Does it cover a leaky tire? No. Does it cover your gas tank? No. Does it cover a new alternator? No. It covers if you get in a wreck, a disaster. So let's use that as an analogy for healthcare. What should insurance cover in healthcare? The disasters. Cancer. Mm-hmm. Wrecked my car and got hurt. I went skiing and ran into a tree. The rare stuff. It should not be paying for your doctor's visit. It should not be paying for your prescription meds. It should not be paying for the little things. If we took out the little things, what happens? People ask, how much is this going to cost? Mm-hmm. And once they ask the question, prices go down. Oh, you charge $100 a visit? Well, I can go to this physician's assistant down the road for $50. I'm going to go to them. Prices come down. Efficiencies increase. Markets work. But that's not what happens. Now we have a third party paying everything, and then it gets this whole racket. And the government's involved. Half of all healthcare money is spent by the government anyways. I mean, people don't think we have a socialized medicine system. We 100% have a socialized medicine system. More than half the people are on the government's teat for medicine. And it's just so broken.
It is. It really is.
I don't have a solution for it. I just know it's broken beyond...
I don't think anyone does.
No, they don't. So... anyways, well, I'm sorry that you're already seeing the frustrations with insurance. It's going to get worse the longer.
Yeah, well.
Well, thanks, Abby, for joining us today. It was really a pleasure getting to know you. I love seeing the fresh new nurses that get into it and all the energy that comes with it. And you have a really good outlook on it. Like, you're real. You're having fun with it. you're gonna do great in this career.
Thank you.
You know, as you progress throughout your career, we'll have you back. And we'll,
perfect.
We'll do some more.
Sounds
we'll
like a plan.
Stories, so, and thank you for everybody that's listening. And until next time, we'll
yes,
see you.
Of course.
Have a good one.